job down at the local mill. Worked right up, not a millionaire. I can pay my bills. Repo man is at my door. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. Well, I had me a wife, keep a car and a boat. Things got bad now.
Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you on the air on listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. The views and opinions expressed here are those of speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Bill with some underwriting announcements.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by the Central Illinois Jobs as Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs as Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at the Channing Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, visit Central Illinois or www.centraliljwj.org. That's centraliljwj.org. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois and the Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off the campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio, and we're proud to be supported by them.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Just to let you know, we got an interesting show today. We have a special guest that we're going to introduce here in a moment. Also, at about 11:20 or so, we're going to open up the phone lines and because we're going to be having a controversial topic today here about a vote that happened in the Illinois State Legislature and the Illinois Senate. We have a guest, David Green, who's going to be talking a little bit about that. But anyway, the phone lines you can call at about 11:20 when we open them up will be 217-359-5483 and also 217-359-6545. Okay, start off at the top of the hour, a little bit of news. Anyway, as we prepare to honor the service and sacrifice for our men and women in uniform this Memorial Day, some in Washington, D.C. are proposing deep benefit cuts targeting millions of seniors, including military retirees and veterans with disabilities. Cutting earned benefits is no way to repay our military veterans and their families for their sacrifices. One such proposal that continues to gain momentum in Washington, D.C. calls for the adoption of a new formula used to calculate the Social Security cost of living adjustment called a chain CPI. If approved, it would amount to an immediate benefit cut for beneficiaries. Like millions of other working Americans, military veterans have contributed to Social Security and are counting on their earned benefits for a secure retirement, and any cuts to an already modest benefit would be devastating. In fact, Social Security is the largest program serving veterans and their families. Over 9 million veterans receive Social Security benefits, 4 out of 10 veterans. The chain CPI will be a double benefit cut for veterans who receive both Social Security and VA benefits. If anything, we need to expand and improve Social Security, not cut it. Bill, you said something happened interesting out in Piatt County here recently?
I'd like to find a story for it, but I was reading something the other day and heard about this from a friend of mine. Basically, we've seen all of these towns and counties, municipalities in general, local areas voting on resolutions whether to support Reichsführer Rahner's local right to work laws. Ohio.
Right to work for less laws.
Right, yes. And which basically it's a quixotic, you might say, task, because any reading of the Taft-Hartley Act does not allow that, as far as I can tell. But the geniuses on the Piatt County Board, including a couple of guys I went to high school, they were in my high school class, apparently don't realize that, so they all voted to support Reichsführer Rahner's right to be exploited by your local government law. And it's typical Piatt County. This county, in 2004, 45% of those people out there voted for the insane, idiotic Alan Keyes for Senate instead against Barack Obama.
Uh-huh.
You know, it just blows my mind to think that. The only thing, I bet they had never even heard. I bet 90% of that 45% had no idea who Alan Keyes was, a person who I don't think has ever lived in this state, and they voted for him because he had an R next to his name.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to get a vote for anything in Piatt County, I have to go vote in the Republican primary because hardly anybody, no Democrats run. One Democrat ran for county board last year, named Kathleen Piatt. And she lost.
Even though her last name was Piatt. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it was a name recognition problem.
Indeed.
It just blows my mind. And I really, I think the Greens need to come out and fill that gap, because there's some hip people out in that area.
Mm-hmm.
But there just isn't. There just is no functioning Democratic Party, as far as I can tell, in that county.
Yeah.
It used to be.
That's the problem. You know, I always call it connecting the dots and trying to find those people and connect them up with each other. That's where the time and effort's going to be involved.
Occasionally we'll get a Democrat state's attorney, but that's basically more part of the legal community sort of deciding who's going to be doing what. But that's about it. I mean, it's sad.
Oh man. Okay, well, at this point I want to introduce a special guest here. Could you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Oh, my name is Angela Bigham, and I am from Champaign, Illinois.
Okay, and what motivated you to come down here to the World Labor Hour today?
I like controversial issues.
Okay, all right. And you're going to Parkland College right now?
Yes, I am. I'm doing broadcasting, visual arts, you know, communications right now.
Okay, all right. Well, we're going to invite Angela back on. In fact, it's her birthday on Saturday, July 4th, and she's going to be on the show. And, you know, she's going to be, it's basically going to be her show. We're going to be kind of just, participating with her, but she's going to choose what topic and everything else to talk about and stuff. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But maybe if she's, she can come on as a co-host with us on the World Labor Hour.
Yeah, I was wondering too, Angela, are you planning to take a television production class?
Yes. I want to do that as well.
Oh, great. That's my thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we wanted to basically warn Angela here. We warned her that we'd get a little controversial, and she said that she wasn't worried about that. In fact, what was it you said to me when I said that?
I love controversy.
Okay. All righty. That's great. Okay. So, man, we're moving right along here. I guess we'll start out with our other guest here today, Mr. Green, David Green. How are you doing today?
I am well. Thank you.
Okay. So, what compelled you to come down to the World Labor Hour today?
Well, you asked me, David.
Okay. Well, I know that. Yes, I did.
You compelled him. Yes.
Okay. But this was, in regards to something that happened over in Springfield here this week, right?
Well, you know, we know each other, and I'm certainly not, I'm not acting as a spokesperson for any of the other people who have commented on in various ways on the issue of the boycott the boycotters legislation that passed in Springfield this past week and the votes of both of our local representatives, Carol Ammons and Scott Bennett, as a non-voting as opposed to a yes or no voting in relation to this anti-BDS legislation that sort of Israel lobby-inspired legislation that was passed through almost unanimously in the Illinois legislature.
Okay, can I read a little bit about this is something I got off as a news story. Maybe this will kind of inform the listeners who don't know what kind of we're talking about here is Illinois lawmakers passed a bill that would compel the state's public employee pension funds to unload investments in companies that participate in any boycotts against the government of Israel. The measure unanimously passed the Illinois House of Representatives on Monday, with the exception of two abstention votes, as you said, one from Carol Ammons and another one from Representative Tabaris. The Illinois Senate approved it by a 49-0 vote in April, and sponsors say that they seek to confer efforts by an international pro-Palestinian campaign known as the BTS movement, boycott, divestment, and sanctions to isolate the government of Israel. The bill requires a state pension system to remove companies that boycott Israel from their portfolios. The measure is an amendment to existing legislation now enforced by the Illinois Investment Policy Board. The bill requires an Illinois Investment Policy Board to first draw up a list of companies believed to be boycotting Israel. Those firms would then be notified that they may become subject to divestment by the state of Illinois if a company maintains its policy. And anyway, under the legislation, boycott Israel means engaging in any actions that are politically motivated and are intended to penalize or otherwise limit commercial relations with the government of Israel. So maybe we need to talk about a little what this is in reference to. Call it the BDS movement.
Let me clarify what I think my understanding of the bill is. Uh-huh. I had to read up on that a little bit this morning in response to a comment that was made on the News Gazette website underneath the editorial yesterday that supported this bill, where the predictable extreme right-wing editors of our hometown newspaper supported this bill. It seems that the legislation is worded only to be directed at non-American companies who are boycotting Israeli companies or boycotting their own companies who operate in the occupied territories of Palestine. So when you read it carefully, you realize they're not even directed at corporations in this company, in this country, and for good reason, because there aren't any corporations in this country that I know of that are actually boycotting Israel at any kind of a formal level. What the BDS movement has been in this country is to get churches and universities and perhaps public pension funds to divest from companies that are invested in the occupation, such as the well-known ones in this state, like Caterpillar, Motorola, Intel, and so forth.
So by the way, don't they all provide products to the Israeli government, like the famous Caterpillar or armored bulldozer?
Well, that's exactly it. Yeah. I mean, Caterpillar is just an obvious one, but it isn't even, you know, there isn't any, you know, nobody, it isn't like Caterpillar is going to end up boycotting Israel and then the Illinois state pension funds are going to divest from Caterpillar. That's fantasy land. What we're talking about is that the BDS movement has had some success mainly in Europe in encouraging companies like Veolia, I think that's a French company, to divest from its affairs in the occupied territories.
And I was going to say, what's the purpose of this divestment movement, the BDS movement?
The purpose of the BDS movement, and in some ways I'm critical in the manner that people like Noam Chomsky and Norman Finkelstein are critical of the BDS, sort of brand BDS movement, as opposed to the more focused boycott or divestment movements. The brand BDS movement purpose is sort of justice for all in Israel and Palestine without committing itself to supporting either the one state or two state solution. And I think, along with Chomsky and Finkelstein, I agree that it's a mistake for the brand BDS movement, the movement that's most identified with the Palestinian named Omar Barghouti, to not express its support for the two-state movement within the guidelines of international law, leaving the BDS movement open and vulnerable to accusations that they want to destroy Israel, quote unquote, destroy Israel. And of course, that's fair in the sense that the single state approach means that Israel wouldn't exist in its current form. And that's a fair enough thing to say. The implication, of course, is that they want to kill Israelis and kill Jews, and that these accusations become accusations of wanting to do harm, and that's, of course, absurd. The one-state movement simply wants a democratic state in what is now Israel and Palestine. Unfortunately, there isn't any, as Finkelstein is continually pointing out, and you can watch his interviews on the Real News Network if you wanted sort of an easy way of accessing his views, which I basically are supportive of. This movement should be one that supports what is politically possible along the lines of international law, and which has international support, and that is the two-state solution.
Okay, so you know, this is not a topic that normally would be covered here on the World Labor Hour. And again, I want to remind you, it's 11:20. Thank you, Bill. So if any of you have any listeners have any comments or questions, you can call 217-359-5483 or 217-359-6545. Okay, so like I said, normally this is not a labor issue. However, it seemed like it's hit close to home now. Okay.
Oh yeah, but the Illinois pension system. The tension.
Hello, you're on the air, rising. WFT.
Yes, hi, this is John calling about the Israeli-Palestinian issue.
I'm sorry, I can barely hear you. I don't know if you, if you could, I don't know, talk into your phone a little closer or what?
Can you hear me okay?
Are you on speakerphone?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Yeah, that's a little better. Okay.
Okay. About the Israeli-Palestinian issue. If it's a two-state solution, it seems to me the Israelis would do everything they could to still oppress the Palestinian state. So it seems, in my opinion, it seems a one-state solution is better, giving all Palestinians the right to vote and tearing down the oppressive apartheid system that has been law in Israel for quite some time, including discontinuing disowning and taking the Palestinian properties for the construction stuff. And I'll hang up here and let the speaker answer.
Okay. Well, thank you, caller, and then we'll pass this on to the guest. Okay, the caller was commenting about how he thought it seemed like the one state solution basically were, what exists now? How come, aren't Palestinians allowed to vote?
What exists, Palestinians who are citizens of Israel are allowed to vote, but are disempowered in the system the way it works. All those are interesting things that happened in the most recent election in terms of Arab unity, but they still have no power. They've never had any representation in the Israeli cabinet. But what you've got is occupied territory of 4 million people, 4 million stateless people who have every minute and every day and every step of their lives controlled by the Israeli government within this apartheid system.
Now that's mainly, you're referring to
the
Gaza?
West Bank and Gaza. And
okay.
East Jerusalem.
Okay. So the point was, what was the question?
I'm sorry, I'm not hooked up to hear.
Yeah,
the phone
I'm
calls.
Sorry, you know, you don't have any headphones and we don't have any way of broadcasting this over the speaker here. But basically he thought the one state solution would be the most democratic, solution here.
Yeah.
And also basically in regard, he made a reference, to like an apartheid system. And, we've heard this before. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, it seems to me there's a lot of similarities if you know. I mean, first of all, you know, like there's been a lot of similarities between comparing Israel to the old apartheid, regime in South Africa, mm-hmm. in which, you know, black people were not, you know, they were disenfranchised, were not allowed to vote and everything else. Do you think that's a fair comparison?
It's a comparison that should be made, although I think increasingly understood is that the apartheid that exists in Israel and Palestine is actually worse than what exists in South Africa, because South Africa, and here it gets into a labor issue, was dependent on black labor. Israel was at one time dependent on Palestinian labor. Since 1993, since the Oslo agreements in 93, it has largely excluded. There's still some crossover, but mm-hmm. it largely started importing Asian laborers and some African laborers, instead of relying on the Palestinian laborers that used to come into Israel every day from Gaza and the West Bank. So the Palestinians are cut off from the opportunities to work in Israel. Their economy is stifled. Their economies are what has been called de-developed. The woman named Sarah Roy has done a lot of research in Gaza, and the economic de-development of Gaza goes all the way back to the 1960s, to Israel's original occupation of Gaza mm-hmm. during the 1967 war. So there are many issues here that have to do with stifling of labor that make it even economically worse. And much, much more sadistic and brutal on a daily basis than apartheid in South Africa, as we can see. I mean, I was trying to think of analogies, what to say before coming on this show. It's like in Palestine, it's like Ferguson every day. It's like Selma every day. You know, that's what it is. For people to go from one place to the next, they have to go through Israeli checkpoints. They have control over every aspect of their lives. There's an autonomous Area A governed by the sort of puppet regime, Palestinian Authority, on the West Bank. But, the issues here are clear cut. We can debate these issues. What we're talking about here is increasingly understood, intensely apartheid, intensely racist, incipiently genocidal system. When you talk about 95% of the drinking water in Gaza not being fit for human consumption, at that point you're talking about the beginnings of a kind of genocide. So this is what our legislators unanimously refused, in a sense, to vote against.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And how is Israel racist? I mean, you mentioned genocidal.
Well,
is it in a legal structure like it was in South Africa?
Yeah, I mean, it's a legal, I mean, there's, at the most fundamental level, there's no such thing as a citizen of Israel. There are only Jewish and Arab citizens of Israel, which have different statuses in that system. So there is no such thing as equal rights in Israel, and every aspect of the structure of the Israeli economy, political economy and culture, whether it's within Jews, between Jews and Palestinians, or between citizens of Israel and the immigrants, the increasing refugees that are coming from Africa. At each level of that reveals a more intense and open racism. And it's quite acceptable to express racist views. The members of the Israeli cabinet, this is the most right-wing cabinet that was elected in Israeli history a couple of months ago, which is saying something. And there is open racism. And as you know, Max Blumenthal has well documented that racism in his book, Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
So I would encourage people to read
that. Yes, I read that book, and it's very disturbing, very well written. I mean, I highly recommend it. Okay, looks like we have another caller here. Okay, on the 6545 line. Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
Hey, it's John again. I wanted to see what your guest had to say about Operation Defensive Edge last year and Operation Cast Lineup. You were talking about racism in Israel, and I'd also like his comments about the new Minister of Defense, who is quoted before the Knesset is saying we need to kill all the snakes, Palestine, the children, kill them before they become adults. Kill them all.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Okay. That was the same caller. I guess he caught off. He wanted to make another point. He was referencing what you mentioned about the racism. He was talking about the recent, member of the head of the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, mm-hmm. talking about being quoted as saying, reference to the Palestinians, we need to kill all these snakes and we need to kill their children before they become adults. Is that true?
Well, yeah, there's something like that. I think he might be referring to a woman named Ayed Shakalad.
Yes, he mentioned that name.
Yeah,
yes.
And she has been appointed to which ministry. I mean, these things are, of course, just appointed as part of the cabinet process to appease the various political parties and to form a government. But in any event, it's not unusual. This has become the culture in Israel. It's not, you know, people can go as deeply into it as they want. This is not something that we should be legitimizing mm-hmm. in this country. And that's maybe a hot button word because, of course, opponents of their policy of occupation are constantly accused of delegitimizing Israel, of delegitimizing the Jewish state, and therefore of being anti-Semites. And this is just an example. This opportunity. I'm sorry. I'm going to keep bringing it back to the Illinois legislature because
no, that's you know, what kind of we're going to focus on. But we got to kind of
yeah,
go
you know,
around.
I want to just keep bringing it back to the clear moral case here. Whether you want to make an analogy to apartheid South Africa or Nazi Germany, for that matter, do what you will. But it's kind of shocking that there can't be one person in the Illinois legislature that opposes a bill that criminalizes companies that boycott the occupied aspects of Israel, the Israeli occupied territory in Palestine. This is not a difficult factual issue. This is not a difficult moral issue. This is not a difficult interpretive issue. This is just an issue of doing the right thing. So first we have to what kind of political climate do we have in which people simply cannot bring themselves to vote against this top-down measure, not this popular measure, not anything they heard about. People didn't hear about this wasn't generated by a popular movement organizing to go to legislature. The person that was quoted in the News Gazette editorial yesterday is an operative, is a young man who is an operative making good money working for the Israel lobby, for the Israel something or other. And they can do this because they have the money, and they can do this because they have legislators scared. If you want to look at Jeffrey St. Clair's column on the front page of Counterpunch this weekend, you talk about they don't even have to tell legislators what to do. They've been so indoctrinated by this pro-Israel propaganda that they jump even before somebody tells them to jump.
Okay, we're going to take a quick music break, and we're going to be right back. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on the supported community radio station, WFT, in Champaign, Illinois.
I've been waiting for something to happen for a week or a month or a year, with the blood in the ink of the headlines and the sound of the crowd in my ear.
You might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before. Where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. And does a shadow on the faces of the men who send their guns to the wars that are fought in places where the business interests run. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again. How the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own. Are the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun, or a brick, or a stone. In their lives in the balance, there are people under fire. There are children at the cannons. There is blood on the wire.
Okay, we're right back here just in time for another phone call. Let's see what line the caller is calling in on here. Okay, looks like 6543. Okay. Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
Yep.
Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
Hey, have your guest talk about the professor who was hired at the University of Illinois to teach American Indian Studies.
Yes, Professor Salida, yeah?
Yeah. Okay, you've already discussed that. I just got you late.
Okay, yeah, we'll mention that. Thank you very much. Okay, yes, he wanted to say if we had talked about the Salida case, the professor at the U of I, and we had a whole show on that, back a month or so ago, but maybe David, you could explain briefly, to the listeners what he was referring to, or those who don't know.
Well, Stephen Salida was hired.
As a professor at the U of I?
As a professor at the U of I, has a history of writing some very, very, I think, cogent criticism of Israel. He made some more vituperative criticism of Israel during last summer's Operation Protective Edge.
And what was that?
One of the regular massacres that Israel engages in Gaza. I realize some people will think I'm simplifying that, but this is just a process that Israel does. You could ignore all the stuff about whether Israel is retaliating or not. They're not. They regularly plan to have massacres in Gaza, and there will be more. So again, you can reference Norman Finkelstein's short book Method and Madness, which you can get buy a PDF copy of from OR Books online and read Stephen made some vituperative comments on his tweet on his Twitter, and the word got back to both pro-Israel donors in this state and to a local academic named Kerry Nelson, who had it in for him, and who has sort of whose behavior and in the regards to his opposition to the BDS movement in general and to the hiring of Stephen Salida has been reprehensible and duplicitous and you can say that anybody who I think attempts to downplay the enormities of Israel's behavior in Gaza is rather racist. Mm-hmm. So this went down, and this unhiring or firing went down in a way that was blatant violation of his rights. And so this is going to be in court. And it's one of the many things that Phyllis Wise is having to deal with, which I think eventually is going to blow up in her face. I think eventually the pressure from various perspectives on Phyllis Wise and her efforts to sort of manage this neoliberal campus is going to end up being, resulting in a relatively graceful exit on her part.
Okay. I found an interesting article about You know, this kind of hits close to home here as far as, I guess there's quite a bit of things written about how the local various police departments all over the country have taken various training in Israel from Israeli police and military trainers. In fact, this article is talking about that after the killing of 18-year-old Michael Brown by Ferguson police in Ferguson, Missouri, the people of Ferguson were subjected to a military-style crackdown by a squadron of local police departments dressed like combat soldiers. This prompted residents to liken the conditions on the ground in Ferguson to the Israeli military occupation of Palestine. And anyway, there's scenes of paramilitary units in camouflage rampaging through the streets. Anyway, let me take this call real quick. Let's see which line this is on. Okay. Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
I'd like to say hi to David Green. I've not heard from him in a long time.
Okay.
What the Israelis refer to in their last operation is called mowing the grass.
Mowing the grass. That's what they refer to as far as the attack on Gaza.
They, mm-hmm. they have to go in and mow the grass. And it reminds me so much of the Warsaw Ghetto. If anything, it might even be worse if that's possible. But they're doing the same thing in the Ukraine right now. We're sending military advisors because the Kievian fascists are so inept, they're unable to defeat the freedom fighters in the east, in the Donbass, which is the richest part of the country. Kiev's destroyed most of it already, but they're still fighting. They're still fighting. They are not going to fold.
Yeah. Okay. And back to the whole thing about the. What did you think about that vote in the state legislature last week, as far as Illinois monies punishing, you know, basically withdrawing and divesting from any company that has any ties to divestment from the Israel.
This is the question on the table. I think it's the Democratic Party machine, led by the mayor of Chicago, who's one of the higher figures in AIPAC, in the Israeli lobby, and it was probably very difficult to defeat it. It should have been defeated.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, at the same time, the billionaires tax lost by 3 votes.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who by? Members of the Democratic Party.
So
go figure that one out. I'll let you go.
Thank you, caller. Okay, take care. Okay, anyway, the caller wanted to basically say that he was making a comparison to what's been going on in Ukraine. I don't really want to go there because
it's an interesting point.
Yes.
Because what we're talking about here is urban warfare.
Okay? Yes.
And this is, you can make a lot of connections, technological and strategic connections, tactical connections between the way Israel has dealt with its population and the way that we're dealing with populations in this country and the way that we've dealt with warfare in Iraq, specifically urban warfare. So these are things that need to be drawn even apart from what's going on in Palestine, which is bad enough.
Yeah, he mentioned an organization called AIPAC. What is AIPAC?
AIPAC is basically it's the informal name for it's usually equated with the Israel lobby. There's other organizations that can be said to be part of the Israel lobby, but the AIPAC is the center of the Israel lobby, and it's enormously wealthy, and it's basically just something that keeps the Congress in line supporting the $3 billion of military aid that goes to Israel every year and basically jumping as high as whoever is in power in Israel wants them to, and supporting every single thing and making sure that no congressperson could go without being threatened if they dare to oppose Israel in any way, shape, or form.
Okay. Yeah, in fact, it's not just bribery, if you will. Also punitive. I think Cynthia McKinney got stung by the African-American Democratic Congresswoman from Atlanta when she basically stood up to him.
There's debates about all these things, and a hot debate within the pro-Palestinian movement has to do with the nature of the power of the lobby. But suffice it to say that they work very hard to keep Congress in line. I don't think that some people say that the lobby is controlling U.S. foreign policy.
Yeah.
That's going too far. are.
Yeah.
And that's a different debate. And again,
sure.
A debate that I think Noam Chomsky and Norman Finkelstein acquit themselves quite well in arguing.
Okay. Yeah. Back to Ferguson though. It's, when that was going, when people basically were, protesting and, militarized, police, came in and were firing tear gas and shooting rubber bullets and stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, were, making mistakes. They thought it was a Tuesday afternoon in the occupied West Bank in Israel. And it's no coincidence, as article says, because at least two of the four law enforcement agencies that were deployed to Ferguson, both the two of them were the St. Louis County Police Department and the St. Louis Police Department, received training from Israeli security forces in recent years. This seems like this is not just limited to Ferguson, there's a wealth of scholarship on police militarization in the U.S., and there's been really, a lot of connections to Israel.
And of course, Israel didn't do that. It didn't cause us
correct.
To become a militarized
correct.
Society. It's just that it's very convenient, for us. They've been kind of a laboratory for the control of people in relatively urban spaces. And along with everything else, all the back and forth between this country that receives $3 billion a year from us, there's a lot invested there, and it's multifaceted. Let me read one sentence from the introduction of a book called Cities Under Siege, which was published in 1910. Cities Under Siege: The New Military Urbanism by Stephen Graham, a British geographer. One sentence from the I read a longer version of this on News from Neptune yesterday, and people can watch that on UPTV or look it up on YouTube. Graham writes, in the context of 1910, meanwhile, aggressive and militarized policing at public demonstrations and social mobilizations in London, Toronto, Paris, and New York are now starting to utilize the same non-lethal weapons, quote unquote, quote, as Israel's army in Gaza or Jenin, which is a city on the West Bank that was basically ransacked in 2002. So I can read a longer excerpt from this at the appropriate time, but
okay.
It's a good issue to raise, not to blame Israel for what's going on in this country, but to connect these are broadly speaking, neoliberal policies.
And what is neoliberal? For some people might not understand what that term means.
Well, it has to do with all of the forces that are controlling global capital, that are accumulating global capital in relatively few hands, and how that plays itself out in terms of labor and in terms of resources,
mm-hmm.
and in terms of the control of the populations.
So in other words, the policy of austerity, which is basically pushing
absolutely.
Down wages
yeah.
of workers,
yeah.
Cutting back, preventing any kind of public health care system like single payer, trying to privatize our Social Security,
yeah.
Those are some examples of that. Is that
yeah.
correct? Okay.
We don't have to solve the problem of neoliberals to solve the problem of Israel's occupation
mm-hmm.
of Palestine. So I don't want to get too overwhelming
sure.
with all this context. What people who understand this think is that in spite of people constantly saying this is an intractable conflict that's been going on for thousands of years, it's actually a very tractable conflict that's been going on for 100 or 80 or 60 or 40 years, depending on how you want to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the solution to this, along the lines of international law, in comparison to many other global conflicts, is relatively easy. Palestinians have been the representatives of the Palestinians, going back to Yasser Arafat in the 1970s, have been suing for peace with Israel along the lines of two states. It's Israel that's rejected Israel, and its American sponsors that have repeatedly vetoed or voted against resolutions at the United Nations to effect a very feasible two-state solution along the 1967 borders, along what are called the June 6th 1967 borders, prior to the start of that war.
Okay, we're going to take a quick music break and be right back. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on Listener Supported Community Radio Station WFT in Champaign, Illinois.
Battle hymns for the broken, Battle hymns for the misled. Battle hymns for the wretched, the forgotten and the dead. Battle hymns of redemption, of solidarity and pride. Battle hymns we will be singing at the turning of the tide. Can you explain to the mothers and the fathers of those who come riding home in coffins in their military clothes, shiny medals pinned to their dead teenage chests while the trumpets blare? And you lie your best, so ask all you want. From the dusk till the dawn, the answer's still no, 'cause brother, I'm gone. Battle hymns for the broken, battle hymns for the misled, battle hymns for the wretched, the forgotten and the dead. Battle hymns of redemption, of solidarity and pride. Battle hymns we will be singing at the turning of the tide. Can you explain away the sleight of hand and the criminality of spending souls for oil? Well, in the mirror I can see, I am the path that leads down, I am the dark and bloody hall. I'm the reaper, executioner, hangman, judge and the law. So tie a yellow ribbon round the oak tree on the lawn. But the cavalry's not coming, 'cause brother, they're gone. Battle hymns for the broken, battle hymns for the misled, battle hymns for the wretched, the forgotten and the dead.
Okay, that was Tom Morello, Battle Hymns. Yeah, I think it was a very appropriate song for Memorial Day. Battle hymns for the, what do you say, the battle hymns for the broken, for the misled. I mean, it's really ties into this as far as, you know, a lot of working class and poor American youth having to go in the military because they you know, they can't afford to go to college, or, you know, they want to get training, and they end up being thrown into these countries and fighting wars for rich people, basically.
I have a comment, though, about Tom Morello, a man, yes, who I immensely respect as a musician and an activist. But a few years ago, it probably would have been 2011 during the Occupy movement, I have to look up how much Tom Morello's worth. Mm-hmm. Well, he could have easily financed the entire Occupy movement.
Really?
With big PA, you know, whatever they wanted, man. Yeah. He was worth $26 million at that point.
Wow. Okay.
And it's not just Tom Morello. I mean, just look at all of the celebrities and stuff, even though the conservatives are always constantly talking about how Hollywood finances the Democrats. But there's people with much, you know, like other folks like Tom Morello that have been very successful, and I don't know why they don't throw, I'm happy for what they do, but I think they could do a whole lot more.
Well, let's see if we can get Tom Morello to call in for an interview. We can ask him those questions.
He needs to be our Koch brother or something.
Okay. I got a letter here that's written by a local Champaign resident in regards to this vote in the Illinois House. And it's written to the there's only two Illinois state reps who refused to vote yes on this bill, which were our own Carol Ammons and another representative, Ms. Tabaris. And he writes,
also pointed that Scott Bennett did the same thing
in the Senate.
In the Senate.
Yes, okay. Yes. He write to express my appreciation that you at least did not vote yes on Senate Bill 1761, the bill requiring that state pension funds divest from any company participating in a boycott of anything related to Israel, even of products of illegal Israeli settlements. As far as I can see, you were only one of two of those present in the House who did not vote yes on this bill. The other one was my own state representative, Carol Ammons. I wish that both of you and many others had voted no, if only on the grounds that such an anti-boycott bill is an unconstitutional restriction on free speech, as the American Civil Liberties Union has argued. But I appreciate that at least you had the strength not to go along with all the other representatives who simply voted yes. So, comment, David, on that?
I think that the conscientious vote would have been a no vote, and to deal with the, to more openly deal with the repercussions of that, bring some of these issues out into the open. Carol Ammons would have had plenty, or Scott Bennett for that matter, would have had plenty of support around this state and around this country, especially if either of them had been singular, the only person to be opposed to this sort of stampede, this sort of cowardly stampede. So I would have encouraged her to vote yes. I'm disappointed that she voted not voting. It's hard to say whether that's as bad as voting yes, but you know.
Okay, we're going to take this call here. Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Dave. I wanted to call in about this issue.
Okay.
In regards to this bill that was just passed, a while back, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, on my email, somebody had posted information about this impending bill. I think it was Bob Naiman, actually.
Okay.
And there were phone numbers there for our two representatives, Scott Bennett and Carol Ammons, to call. And I did call Carol Ammons's office. And my mind's a little bleary about exactly what went on, because I had made a lot of calls to senators and representatives at that time. There were a lot of issues I was calling people about, so I'm trying to get this straight. But as I remember, I voiced my opposition to this bill and my desire that, Carol vote against it. And the person who took my call, Carol was not available, but the person who took my call basically said that, well, other people have called about that too. Yes, and we're going to, do something. So she, so my only point is that she was, I think she was alerted by people in the community.
Okay.
About, their concerns about that.
Okay.
But the other thing I just want to mention was something that David Green had posted on my email too, which I believe it was a letter that went to that was written to the News Gazette. I'm not sure, but it just kind of hit home to me just how horrible this bill is, because Illinois is the first place that's done this.
Okay.
But AIPAC is so strong, you can just see this spreading over the country. So. To the different states. And I'm just absolutely horrified that there's a lot of touting on the right wing about free speech, that money is speech, and, we should be able to exercise that. Well, so this is a tactic kind of like that, and now that's been subverted with this. And I'm just really extremely upset about it, very disappointed.
Okay, thank you, caller.
Thank you.
Okay, yes, the caller called in to say that...
I was able to hear
that. Oh, you were able to hear that. Okay, very good. Okay.
Good. Yeah. So, yeah, I want to come out unequivocally in criticism of Carol Ammons and Scott Bennett for their failure to vote no on what is a very clear moral issue relating to do with apartheid and incipient genocide in Israel and Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to make an analogy to South Africa and towards a bill that would have boycotted people boycotting South Africa 25 or 30 years ago, you may do so. If you want to simply look at the overwhelming reality on the ground in Israel and Palestine and the blatant bullying that goes on from the Israel lobby and from, unfortunately, we avoid saying Israel lobby, and we want to say Israel lobby instead of Jewish lobby, but the mainstream Jewish institutions in this state, the Jewish federations centered in Chicago but also located here, and by and large, the religious community, whether Orthodox, conservative, or Reform, has been politicized in support of these violations of human rights. And it's kind of getting to the point that we have to call it for what it is. And I think I think that what this issue is waiting for is individuals with the courage to be the only one to say no, 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 or yes, 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 depending on what,
sure,
what the issue is. But in this case, it was it would be an emphatic no. Let the, you know, as long as you're going to be criticized for making a not voting, then be criticized for making a no and make your case and find out who's out there that's going to support you. And if people in the legislature, refuse to speak to you, then, why do you want to speak to ignorant racist people anyway?
Okay. Just for the record, David, you're a Jewish American, is that correct?
I am a Jewish and an American.
Okay.
And you're American?
And in fact, your son just recently spent some time in Israel, didn't he?
He did. He spent a year there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I spent some time there 40 years ago. I spent 5 months living on a kibbutz and picking fruit, during the harvest season. And that all is neither here nor there. I have had a lot of experience with this issue. I've basically been an activist, as a part of this Justice in Palestine movement for 17, 18 years. And there are many stories that Jewish people tell, and there's a growing Jewish Voice for Peace, movement, nationally and in this city as well.
And there's actually an organization called Jewish Voices for Peace.
Yeah, that is the Jewish Voice. Okay. That I'm referring to the actual organizer. We have a Facebook page, which you can even join. You don't have to be Jewish, or you could just like our Facebook page. But, you know, this is a whole different issue. There are many angles to supporting justice from an Arab perspective, from a Jewish perspective, from an African American perspective, but mainly just from a human rights point of view. I don't find myself being particularly sectarian about this. I like it when people can evoke a tradition of Jewish values, what I identify with this, the Jewish enlightenment and Jewish involvement in leftist, socialist, labor, civil rights, feminist movements. This is all consistent with that. That net doesn't necessarily have anything to do, or in the minds of some people isn't a religious thing. It may be just a secular thing. That's what it is with me. But, we are an ethnic / religious group in this country. We have a history, we have a voice, and we need to be careful about, nobody can speak for all of us, but it's important that we attempt to promote what we think is best about this legacy that was given to people of my age, people of younger age.
Okay, I want to mention that because one of the tactics of the Israel lobby, of course, is anybody that opposes the policies of the Israeli government is either called an anti-Semitic, if you're not Jewish, and what do they call Jewish people that oppose those policies?
They call them, well, if you're probably wanting to get me to say, self-hating Jew, but...
Unbelievable. You know what? That just angers me to no end.
Well, I've gotten over David, so maybe it's time you get over it.
Okay, all right, fair enough, David. Okay, well, you've been listening.
I mean, this has been going on for a really long time, and honestly, nobody takes these charges. I mean, I know these charges keep coming, and you keep thinking they're going to stop, because they're just so absurd and so threadbare at this point. But they keep trying it, and so you just, I suppose you have to respond to it in some way, but... You know, it's so pathetic, really. It's just so pathetic.
Okay, very quickly, Dave.
Yes.
I want the listeners out there, no matter whether you're streaming us from somewhere real far away or if you're listening locally, just take a look at this story. It's got a real local connection,
yes,
but it is international. It is state level. It's all over the place. It's good for a lot of listeners. And please go to weft.org and make a donation.
Okay.
And urge all your friends to start listening.
Yes, because, you know, we like to, think that we offer something that no other radio station here in the city of Champaign-Urbana does. I mean, maybe not the world, but nevertheless, you know, we have some great public affairs programs on WFT that you're not going to hear anywhere on corporate radio, and some great music programs of various music that you won't hear on corporate radio. So, you know, we're very unique in that regard, and this is a community station. Anybody can be a part of it, you know, that's something to remember too. That you're not going to have that option in any kind of corporate structure, particular a corporate radio or TV station. So anyway, you've been listening to the World Labor Hour, and we would just want to leave you with a little more Tom Morello, and to remind you that after our program is the Union Edge.
Tom,
Tom, please make a donation.
Okay, with
WEFT.
With Tom Morell, okay. With host Charles Showalter out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Until next week, be safe and power to the people. Take care.